This episode of Tips from the Top Floor was triggered by my left eye having some trouble. This spawned a discussion with Monica about loss, loss of vision, loss of gear, and last but not least, loss of mojo. This episode is supported by Nations Photo Lab. Your photos don't belong on your phone. Get 15 free square prints from Nations Photo Lab. Just head to nationsphotolab.com/printyourphotos and use the code TOPFLOOR15. That's TOPFLOOR15. Nations Photo Lab prints are made by photographers for photographers. Choose from 4x4 inch or 5x5 inch sizes on their professional quality luster paper. And voila, you've turned your Instagrams into instant handheld memories. Make every moment matter. Head to nationsphotolab.com/printyourphotos and use code TOPFLOOR15 for your 15 free square prints. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 854 for Thursday, January the 31st, 2018.
Tips from the top floor, tips from the top, all right, from the top floor.
All right, we are back, coming to you from New Zealand, and I have Monica with me once again. Let me know if you enjoy Monica being on the show.
I hope so. Hi.
So this time there might be a bit more background noise around because we are near Te Anau, which is in the south of New Zealand, still on the southern island, and it is on a berry farm. Mm-hmm. We are on a raspberry farm. When we looked for, we pre-booked a lot of these places here, and when we saw this, Monica is a berry fan, and when we saw that there's a berry farm and they have a few sheep and they have a couple goats.
And two pigs. Mr. and Mrs. Pig.
Mr. and Mrs. Pig. We thought, hey, it's great to... That's the thing we should book. And I think just today you've been out how many times now? Out in the field to pick berries?
Four times.
At least. No, probably five.
And yeah, four with some kind of device to collect the berries. A bit more when you just... collect.
Oh yeah,
the strides are made to just pick them, and
we do not count the amounts of times you just walked through the field and picked berries left and right.
Right. but I'm allowed to do that. It's...
Yes.
Yeah.
So, this show is about loss. Well, let me actually. We have one noise generator here, which is called a fridge. I'm just switching this off, so. But there will be other noise. We might hear the sheep or
the dog.
The dog,
the dog,
or the goat
might come in, or the goat.
So the title of the show is about loss, about losing something. And the reason I decided to talk about this, or I discussed this with you, Monica, and we thought this might be a good topic to talk about in general. The reason is that I had a bit of a scare here, a little bit of a scare, not too big, not too bad, but a few days ago, I started getting some pain in my left eye, and it kept feeling like there was something, you know, like sometimes you have an eyelash under your eyelid, or a grain of sand in
sand,
or an insect in your eye. That's what it felt like, and it became worse over a few days. And it got to the point where it was very, very uncomfortable, and I could barely keep my eye open. And so I went to the doctor, and the doctor did a very good job in examining the eye and shone into it with a special light and put some orange fluid in there to see if there are any cracks in the eyeball
or scratches
in the eyeball. He put some like an orange fluid in there and then shone a blue light in it, and he did all the things you have to do to kind of find out what it is, and he told me what it could be and what he doesn't think it is, and it's not a conjunctivitis. So not a viral infection, but more of an irritation. I might have rubbed something in there, maybe some, I don't know, sunscreen or some sand from the beach. Yeah, or
sunscreen doesn't make scratches, but
Something scratched the eyeball, yeah. The white part of the eyeball. So, and it's my left eye. And I get drops now, and I put them in, and I got some cream that I put in overnight. And it's already on the way up, so I'm not too worried about that. But the thought crossed my mind. What happens if I, as a photographer, if I lose an eye, if I lose part of my eyesight? And loss in general is a topic, and we haven't really prepared this in detail, but we wrote down a few topics, a few areas of loss that we might want to talk about. One is eyesight. And then we got to the question, what happens if I lose my left eye? Which is my predominant eye? And everyone, I think, should ask themselves that question, because I'm a right eye person.
Mm-hmm.
That's the eye I use to take photos with.
Most people are
right eyed. And
I'm left eyed.
And you are left eyed.
Right.
So what does that have? What consequences does that have?
For most camera models, it's just annoying, because especially with older cameras, for example, my Nikon FM2, if I use my left eye as I usually do, I have
the advanced lever.
The advanced lever is on the right hand side, and that it does not always stick out, just when the camera is on. So if I switch it on, so that
the meter works, and everything.
You flip out the lever a little bit, might be half a centimeter or something, but that's enough that it sticks into your right eye if you look through the camera with the left eye. And that is kind of annoying. I mean, I managed to work around that a bit just by tilting the camera a tiny bit. But it's something that makes it uncomfortable for me to use a certain type of camera model. There are a few
rangefinder models have their eye, they have their viewfinder on
always
their left
on the
side,
left.
And they are made to look through them with your right eye, so that your left eye is open to take in the scene,
right.
and you pretty much. It doesn't work for you at all.
Not at all. And I have tried to switch to my right eye. Not a chance. It just doesn't work for
doesn't
me.
Doesn't work?
No, I cannot even. And the thing is also, when I use my left eye, I do not close my right eye. I'm not able to really, in a good way, close my right eye. I just leave it open and look onto the camera back.
So, I mean, you can obviously see through both eyes.
Absolutely.
So what happens when you try using your right eye to compose photos? Does the composition not turn out? Does it just feel wrong?
I'm just not able to, because I cannot close my left eye in a good way, because when you look through your right eye, you should close the left one.
Or you train yourself to leave them both open.
Both open, yeah. And I do that when looking through my left eye, but then the camera is in front of my right eye, so it doesn't distract me from looking through the viewfinder. So everything in front of my right eye is basically black. So that's the easiest way for me to do it. And I'm not able to switch. I just cannot operate the camera. Maybe I'm stupid. And I heard from people that they were able to train the other eye to do the job, but I can't.
But maybe it's unnatural. Like if you train a lefty to become right-handed.
I think if I would have to, really have to do it, there would be a way in training myself to do it. Because years ago, when I learned to write, I was almost 6 years old, I broke my right arm, and I'm right-handed. And in school, I then had to write with my left hand.
You had to train yourself.
I had to train myself. And as I broke my arm twice, the first time, and then when they wanted to take the cast off again, it was not healed in the correct way, so they had to break it again.
Ouch.
So in total, I had my arm in a cast for more than 6 weeks. Uh-huh. And in those 6 weeks, I wrote with my left hand, and you can learn it. But back then, I was really, really young, and that makes things easier.
Yeah.
And now I'm I'm a 47-year-old woman, and I mean, if I would lose my left eye, I would probably...
You have to retrain yourself,
and I think if you have to do it, you can do it. But right now, it's just not feeling comfortable for me in any way.
Yeah. So I tried. Interestingly enough, the right eye is my photography eye, but I use both eyes. And when this irritation was at its worst, I had my left eye mostly partially closed, so I didn't really look through it, and I looked through my right eye. And that was really an interesting sensation, because I got this feeling of only partially getting the information that I wanted to get. And even if the left eye was just slightly opened and had a very blurry component of the whole thing, it became instantly much better.
Yeah, the third dimension.
And not even the third dimension, just the feeling of completeness, even mm-hmm. when reading something in 2D. Anyway,
you should have seen him. It was really difficult, because normally he is on his phone all the time, reading stuff on his phone. And now all of a sudden that was not as much fun as it used to be. So he was quite grumpy, I would say.
No, it wasn't grumpy.
A bit.
It's getting better, though. Oh, and it's a really good feeling to not have that irritation in your eye anymore.
Don't rub it.
I just did, yeah. I shouldn't, I know. It still feels... Anyway, so loss. Okay, I will not lose my eyesight. That's a good...
That was never a question.
That's a good... Man. That wasn't really a question, yeah. But that's a thought that went through my mind, not through my eye. So eyesight. I had a scare about loss... several years ago, after doing a photo workshop tour in the United States, at the end of the tour, on the last day, I lost my voice, and I had a throat infection, and I had to keep doing the workshop and teach and talk, and even though I shouldn't probably have done that, and that really made me completely lose my voice. And that was another kind of a wake-up call, because it really showed me how important my voice is. Once you lose it, it got me into a pretty panicked state, because I'm a podcaster. I love talking into microphones, and not being able to do that would have changed a lot of things for me. The podcasts are just so important for me. So coming back home, I got voice training back then, and it has really changed a lot of things for me.
Yeah, and even surgery was an option at the beginning.
They talked about surgery. Yeah. By the way, the kids in the background, there are four kids that live here on the farm, so yeah, they're playing outside. So my voice... The surgery wasn't a real option. I had several doctors look at it, and they saw a little knot on my vocal cord, which wasn't really there, because another doctor looked and he didn't see it. And it was a strange multiple diagnosis situation. But pretty much I had 1 year of vocal training, mm-hmm. and that made it better. And that helped me understand my voice better. So that kind of a loss changed things for a better. But it was, at the time, it was very scary. It was super scary.
Yeah, that's not really an option. If you are a podcaster, there is no second voice you could use. Or your spare voice that you have in the fridge somewhere.
And and borrowing Siri wouldn't really fly well.
Absolutely not. Especially, I think, in podcasting. It's in podcasting and in radio, people really build a relationship on the things...
Oh, the voice is important.
On the voices. Yes. You are in people's ears. And most of the time, they use
earplugs, earphones, yeah.
Right? And that makes it even more intimate. And the relationship between them and basically your voice is really a strong one.
I believe it's the closest medium because not just do you talk to people very closely, but it's also this whole landscape that happens in their mind because they don't see pictures. They have to imagine things like you walking through the raspberry fields and and the goat
munching away on raspberries.
So losing the voice, not a good experience, but had a good outcome in the long run. So that was good.
It taught you something. It taught you something. It taught me something.
Let's see, what else could you lose in a photography context?
You can easily lose gear.
If you listen to the last episode of Tips from the Top Floor, we talked about you, not quite losing, but getting a camera back from repair that had lost some of its functionality.
Mm-hmm.
And
twice,
which wasn't a good experience, and which made you go digital here, which you've done a bit, but not too much, because I think you're not too comfortable doing that.
No, I'm not super comfortable, as it just isn't my tool of choice.
Mm.
That is the one reason. The second reason is that both of us haven't taken...
This is a vacation.
Yeah, we are first quite lazy when it comes to photography. So a lot of pictures we take with our iPhones, and there are basically only snapshots. But when I recognized that again after the second repair, the camera was not working in a way that it should work, I was really close to tears. That was for me
losing
a good friend, basically, a bit, because this camera was always such a trusted tool. It did what I wanted it to do. It feels like an extension of my hand and my eyes, basically. So I know the format. I now know how the meter works, basically, yeah, what I can expect from the camera,
now,
right? And not having this camera around, I could take any other cameras. I mean, we also have a lot of film cameras in our cupboard. We have, for example, the Pentacon 6, which is also a medium format analog camera, but it's just not the camera that I actually really know how to operate. I mean, it's you put a film in there, and of course you do basically the same things, but you have to take care of other details or of specific quirks a camera has. And if you do not know the camera by heart, actually, that hinders you in taking the best pictures you could take. And so that is definitely a topic for me, because whenever I go out and take photos, I need to know the camera, I need to know the lens to exactly pre-visualize the outcome.
Mm-hmm. Now we as photographers, we kind of tend to be to fall for the gear acquisition syndrome, the GAS, right? So we end up often, I'd say, buying too much gear, buying too much of the stuff that we believe might be helping us. I'm closing a window here, by the way. So now should be a bit quieter. But of course, what I mean, all of us, if you are honest with yourself, you will probably probably be aware that more gear is not always more better, right? But the thing is, the more gear you have, the more you can lose, right? The more gear you have. Now, the question is, of course...
Then you lose. I would say, if you have a lot of gear, really a lot of gear, and you just use it every now and then... What you lose, actually, if somebody steals, for example, a lens, what you lose is money. But if you have a tool that really is near and dear to your heart and to your creative process, you lose something else.
I understand, and the reason what I wanted to get to is, I think everyone should take inventory once in a while, see what they have, what they own in terms of gear, and try to understand what it would mean if you lost that specific part of gear or that specific part of gear or that. And I'm talking lenses, I'm talking cameras, I'm talking flashes, I'm talking umbrellas, I'm talking all the stuff that you could have around your photography, light modifiers, reflectors, and so on. Because once I started doing that, really thinking about, okay, what would happen to my photography if I didn't have this or that? That's when I started becoming a lot more relaxed, and that's when I also started shrinking the gear that I had.
Yeah, that's actually, when you think about that, you might recognize that not your gear is the limit, or the gear is not setting the limits. I see that very often when I think about how I work with certain cameras in my camera stash, and I know that most of the time I am the limited factor because I do not know the specific piece of gear good enough. And this is also a kind of inventory that you should make every once in a while. Think about, how good do you know your gear? What would it take to, or what would make the difference?
Or how much do you use a certain piece of gear?
Right.
Or how could you compensate for a loss of something? Because I think very often, you can squeeze a lot more out of the stuff you have before you have to buy something new.
Absolutely, yeah. So the question is always, what does the specific lens or the camera add to your photography? And if you don't come up with something, if it's just nothing, then it might not be the most important
piece of gear
you own.
Anyway, I think one last area of loss that I believe a lot of us have experienced. I have certainly experienced it. You might have experienced
it.
And I think a few of you out there might also have gone through that. And that's your loss of photographic mojo.
Or creative mojo in general.
In general. Well, it does happen, right? You're caught in your ways. You're not changing things. You're not adding new things. You're not improving.
Or you're not, you even have no idea when to go out and shoot, why you should go out and shoot.
The why, I think, is a very important reason.
Definitely. And I mean, let's face it, most of us have a day job, and this day job might be quite demanding in a physical way, or because it keeps your thoughts, even when you are back at home with a family, all your thoughts circle around a certain problem that you have on your day job. And all of a sudden, there is an energy drain. All the energy goes somewhere, but nothing is left to think about creative tasks or your creative hobby. You might sleep not well enough. So there are a lot of things that can easily take away your mojo without you being a bad person or a bad photographer. It's just that you don't have time to think. Sometimes you need to be a bit bored to come up with good ideas. You need to
I think that's really important.
Yeah. And you have to have a lot of energy and, yeah.
I remember that talk somewhere on YouTube, definitely still out there, by John Cleese. Mm-hmm. And John Cleese talks about creativity, and that's one of the things that he says, and I'm totally with him there, is that you need a certain amount of boredom, a certain amount of... also a certain amount of openness, and you can't really have that often if you have too many other things that occupy that space. Now, having had time, I mean, we've been here now for 4 weeks, and it has been a very relaxing time. not too much of your work infiltrating, at least not that I know of. You are the one in this relationship who has a day job, mm-hmm. so you have a pretty draining job. do you notice any change?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think I mentioned that the episode before the last one, that I'm on a 6-month sabbatical right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I can clearly see that after a few weeks, I needed to get used to this new state, not having to go to work every morning, that something happened in my brain. I all of a sudden had more ideas, had more... It was more fun to just test things out, sit there and
dabble.
And take my notebook and write things down and just playing things back and forth. And there was brain space left, so to say, to really let the thoughts take one more turn than months before than usually. And that is something where I experienced a total increase of creative thoughts, so many ideas, so many what ifs that I would not have had during the last month of my day job, where it was just I was happy enough if just nothing special happened during a day.
Mm-hmm.
and I came back and I was tired anyway, so having the time to spend time doing nothing. There is a Calvin and Hobbes where I think Hobbes says to Calvin, a weekend never has enough time to do all the nothing you want to do. And that is a beautiful image. You cannot be creative if you have to think about how do I put as many creative tasks in one weekend as possible.
Yeah.
Or in 2 hours at night or whatever. So you need time to spare and time to just sit and think and do nothing. And that helps a lot in getting the creative juices flowing.
Now, not everyone will have the luxury of being able to take 6 months off your
that
job.
That is an extreme,
which,
but...
It's very extreme. It's also financially quite demanding, but you made it possible. And... the question is, how can people build it into their daily, weekly routine?
I think one important point is the word build. Really take your planner and make an appointment with yourself to do something around photography. It doesn't have to be the big photo walk. It doesn't have to be... I will develop 20 rolls of film tonight. It might only be read a magazine, a photo magazine, or...
But make a point in doing it.
Make a point in doing it. Really put something into your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And not just, if I'm done with everything tonight and the kids are in bed, I will then probably read a bit. That is not what I'm talking about. It's taking your calendar, taking your planner, and really set an appointment.
Mm-hmm. There's one tool that you've been using for a while now that I think listeners might benefit from. This is not a paid advertisement, but
no, absolutely not.
But it's a tool that you've been using for 3 years now, I think.
Yeah, you came up with this. Thank you for that.
Well, I found it. It came across my I don't even remember where, but it's a planner.
Uh-huh.
It's called Passion Planner. And just tell us a few words, because I think it really has made a bit of a change.
It has. I use it in two ways. On the one hand, I use it as a planner.
So it's a paper planner.
It's a paper planner.
It's a book.
It's a book. And the point is that in the beginning of the year, you sit down, take an hour, and think about the things you want to achieve during the year,
mm-hmm.
Passion-wise.
So it doesn't have to be photography.
It could be
knitting.
I want to be a podcaster, so I want to publish XYZ episodes, or I want to do more yoga because I need to get more relaxed. So you set your goals. Probably it could be goals in at work, but it's designed for all the goals
for
apart
your passions,
from work.
For the stuff that's not work.
For the things you are passionate about. It could be
if you're
workouts.
Passionate about work, then fine. But let's right. assume the hobbies are what you're passionate
right.
about.
Right. So you do some really precise planning in the beginning. You set dates. By the end of a year, I would like to finish my book. Or in 6 months, I want to be so much fitter, and I want to go to the gym at least once a week or whatever. Mm-hmm. You set your goals. And then you are able to phrase that. In each month, you have then the option to really go deeper into your planning.
Mm-hmm.
And you get some questions each week that help you with the tasks of really work on the things you are passionate about. And so to keep track on the things you committed to in the beginning of the year.
And then there's also a component that will let you review what you've done, right? So you pretty much, there's some accountability built
right.
in.
Right, you work with the things you are passionate about for the entire year.
Uh-huh.
And if you do not plan things out, and sometimes I don't have the time or life is just too busy, then I use the planner to document what I've done. So sometimes
the documentation is already a good thing.
It's already a good thing because I see how I spend my time, where I lose time actually, where I do things that I do not want to do, or where I'm just unproductive and sitting around. And I don't know if you do that watching Netflix. I don't, but I know that people do that. So you really get an overview how you spend your time, and you get to think about, do I spend my time wisely when it comes to the things I'm passionate about? And that is really interesting. So I think the passion planner could be an option, but you don't have to use this one. You could easily use other tools.
But it's one tool that I think we both can recommend.
Absolutely, I do.
So
and then, of course, just... Sometimes you feel stuck because you don't like to do photography anymore because you have lack of energy, or you're feeling not well, or your kids have problems in school, and those all
other things get important sometimes.
Yeah, they're
right?
good reasons, but important is also that you let go a bit, or be able to let go a bit. So you could also have other creative outlets, not focus too much on photography and just read.
I've had times where over months I didn't do photography because I just didn't feel the mojo in it, and it just felt right to not
do it.
Do it and do something else, or just don't do anything creative. So don't beat yourself up over not doing anything.
Give yourself permission
to not do photography if it's not the right time for it. Maybe set your camera aside for a month and come back after a while and try it again and see what it does then.
And then there is, of course, always the option to give yourself a certain task or a project.
Of course, the projects, the 52 photos project over a year, or the 365 project over a year, or the weekly picks, or there's like a whole lot of different make yourself go out. Maybe sometimes that's the kick in the butt that you need to go out. I think there's a calendar that you can buy that has like a weekly or even a daily task, a daily photography task. Don't ask me what it's called, but you might be able to find it. Again, photo projects that make you go out and that you have to force yourself to do sometimes are the solution, not always, but sometimes they are the solution, especially for those who'd rather procrastinate these things away.
It helps if you have a friend or
do it with someone,
photo buddy who you can meet and go out with, or set up a certain project with. So yeah, most of the time you're more committed if you don't do it alone.
All right. I think that's enough. Loss of eyesight, loss of gear, loss of voice, and loss of mojo. I think there's some food for thought here. And Monica, thanks for talking.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And that was it for this episode. Signing off for this week from New Zealand, and I'll be back next week. And again, let me know if you enjoy Monica on the show, and I will do my best to convince her to come back for yet another episode. If you like this episode or any of the other ones, you know the drill. I'd really love for you to leave a rating or review on iTunes to help keep the show visible. Your recommendations are pretty much the only advertising that I have. Or, yeah, this is new, buy me a coffee. Go to tfttf.com/coffee to find out more. That's tfttf.com/coffee. Music for the show by Jeff Smith, Silent Pardon, Hans Peter Kagerud Publishing, and Slack Challenges by Release Pixie, Matt, Rav Sitar Armstead, Slack Invitations by Chief Invitation Officer, CIO Rusty Russ, and yes, the Slack is still alive and kicking. The link to get on the Slack is in the show notes, tfttf.com/yslack. My name is Chris Marquardt. You'll find me on social media at Chris, MarquardT. Now go out and take amazing photos. Share them with the world. Be nice to each other. And happy shooting.